I'm Bob Kern, that's K-E-R-N. Through most of my professional career, I used the initial K. Robert, but since the onset of computers that don't like first initials and middle names, I've had to revert to my full name, which is Carl Robert Kern. The first name is my father, who was full-blooded German, second generation born in this country. We're recording this on the 10th day of October in the year 2008, and we're sitting in the living room of our home in the Green Hills Retirement Community in Ames, Iowa. We're about 2 miles from the campus where I came to get a master's degree in 1950, but before I had finished it, I had joined the faculty, the staff, and stayed here for 30 years, and then after retiring, we kept our residence here because we know more people here and have closer, warmer relationships than anywhere else in the world. My work in the field of ag communication began in 1948, the day after I graduated from the University of Illinois. My first job was as a county assistant farm advisor in Illinois. Part of that job was each month to do a magazine put out by the local Farm Bureau. In those days, Farm Bureau was a major sponsor of field extension work. This Farm Bureau in Macon County, the county seat was Decatur, a very nice central Illinois county. The Farm Bureau put out this monthly magazine, and I was the writer, editor, and photographer for that publication. I have worked in the field thus since 1948, and my third and, I guess, successful retirement was in 2002. At least I have worked some since then, but not been paid for it, so I guess that is a reasonable way to set dates on the career that I've enjoyed so much. As I say, I graduated from the University of Illinois in 1948. I had started in the fall of 1941, then interrupted for military service, came back 1946. By this time, I had decided I was interested in a journalistic type career, but having had a year and a half in college, I knew I had to stay with my major, which was general agriculture. At the time, there was a single course given in ag journalism by the extension editor and the bulletin editor. Well, this was not enough for me, so I used all of my electives in journalism and speech, which gave me the basic start of 2 reporting courses, theory, literature of communication, etc. And I took speech when I discovered this was an A course for me and my grade point could use all the help it could get. Well, I graduated in June of 1948, 1 week after being married. And we started both my professional career and our married life in Decatur, Illinois, in a basement apartment on the 21st of June, 1948. After a year and a half in the county, which I enjoyed a great deal and found rewarding, there was a change in the head person in the office, the farm advisor. The man I started with was one of those dream bosses who said, "Come see me when you need to, otherwise just go on with your work." He left, they brought in a new man who did not have that style of administration, and within a short time I knew that one of us had to go, and since he was paid twice what I was, I knew who would need to go. At the time, I still had some GI benefits from my World War II service, and putting that together with an assistantship, I was able to go to Iowa State University College at the time, which actually developed the first ag journalism course in the nation and developed a major in agricultural journalism in 1914. Well, that program was still alive, so I came to Ames with the intent of spending a year and a half here. But before I had finished my work, I had been invited to join the staff, which I did, and then did my research while working full-time, wrote the thesis one night, and revised it over a six-month period, and got the master's degree in technical journalism, it was called, in February of 1955. Shortly after that, I was pulled aside to do a special project for Extension. Those were days in which occasionally an Extension service would develop, we called it a caravan of exhibits, 20 educational exhibits that could be packed in two semi-trailers at night, hauled to the next town, set up in the morning. The educational program went on that afternoon and evening. We closed it down and moved it on. By this time, for reasons that I have never understood, I had been sort of tapped by my boss, Clarence R. Dutch Elder, one of the true giants in the field of ag communication. He had somehow taken either a liking to me or an idea that I had something to contribute. And so much of the later career that I have enjoyed was due to that backing of that man and the way that he gave me jobs to do that gave me opportunity to develop and, I guess, contribute. At the same time, the new director of Extension was an agronomist with whom I had worked as a reporter-writer. He, too, had decided that I had some merit. And so between the two of them, they were a great influence on the satisfaction I took in the work, and they approved a few years later, letting me take a fellowship at the University of Wisconsin in the new National Agricultural Extension Center for Advanced Study. And so we spent the calendar year 1958 in Madison, and with a little manipulation, I was able, with that single year of actual residence, to meet the residence requirements. But of course, I had to do my research and writing while returned full-time. But I managed to get a doctorate there in 1961 with emphasis on administration and psychology of communication were the fields of work. Actually, later they began to call this, I think, spin doctoring. And I guess really that this is what we were learning to do, but I think perhaps we were doing it with a little more concern for the public interest than many of the spin doctors who have followed in that tradition. I had not expected to stay in one place for a long time, but I was offered opportunities to move to other places, California, Utah, Florida, Arizona. But each time I looked at it, I thought to myself, there is not a better agricultural state than the state of Iowa. There is not a better boss in the world than Dutch Elder. And the colleagues were not only genial and friendly, but were capable. And so I was happy each time to go through the process of thinking and return to my office in Morrill Hall more satisfied than before. And this continued until, in 1974, I was given the opportunity to spend 6 months with one of the International Agriculture Research Institutes. This was the one in Hyderabad, India, just starting the Crops Research Institute for the Semi-Arid Tropics, which produced the acronym ICRISAT. I went there to spend 6 months getting the information office set up. About a month after I got there, the director general admitted that he had invited me to see whether he wanted me as a full-time one. Well, I had not gone with the idea of full-time. I had two young children at home who were not that interested in going abroad, so I came back to Iowa State. But there's something about the international bug that gets a person. And this was also the time that education was starting to lose its ability to get funding. Just the early indications that we were going to have difficulty appeared at that time. And with nearly 30 years behind me already, I thought maybe it would be fun to do something else. So through ACE and Hal Taylor, one of the stalwarts of my generation in ACE, was at that time in the Office of Information of USDA. And there was a program that permitted the department to bring a person from the field, pay his salary, and let him do an operation of work in the federal office. Well, Hal and I had been interested in the possible follow-up to the National Project in Agricultural Communication. We had attempted to put together a proposal to see if we could bring it back. Well, money was tight, we couldn't bring it back, but Hal and I decided that it would be useful to have someone go to Washington and spend 6 months reading in the Library of Congress to see what had happened in the behavioral sciences between the start of the National Project in the early 60s and then, which we were nearing 1980. Well, I went in on that project, and the result of it was a paper that became one copy of what was then the Journal of ACE. But it also gave me my opportunity to think about a major shift. Before going to Washington, I told the director at Extension that I did not want to return in my then current job. If he had something that he wanted me to do, I would consider that. Otherwise, I was going to change my work. Well, money was getting tight. He did not have anything. So I was then just eligible to take retirement. I was 1 year past the minimum age. I was 56. And still assuming that there was work out there that I could get. So I decided to take my retirement. I interviewed at two places. In the public relations office of DuPont and CIMMYT, which is the International Center for Study of Corn and Wheat in Mexico. Actually, I was offered both jobs. And one of the things that I still enjoy, DuPont offered me a job at 50% higher than my university salary. So I took that as the idea that all these years I'd been paid 50% less than what I was really worth. So there went any feeling of sense of that I was feeding at the public trough by taking my civil service retirement. Well, anyway, I took the job at CIMMYT in their information office. I spent a year there as the editor for the wheat program. The noted Norman Borlaug had recently retired from his post as the head of the wheat program, but was still with CIMMYT, traveling and promoting the Green Revolution wheat varieties around the world. His office was next door to mine. He didn't spend much time there, so we didn't really get that acquainted. But in addition to that work, the Director General, Bob Havener, had asked me to review their communication program and recommend changes. Well, I found he had in mind also that he was testing me out on whether he wanted me to be the head of it. But when I interviewed, I had told the fellow who was then head, Christopher Dowswell, that I had no interest in being head of the program. At Iowa State, I had been the head of a program in which 17 professional people were probably the best staff ever assembled in one of the extension information units. And I had thoroughly enjoyed that, but I had no need to again become administrator of anything. And so the happy circumstance, you know, life is a series of circumstances. The directors general of all of the International Agricultural Research Centers were meeting at CIMMYT, and one of them, Bill Gamble, had just been the Director General of the International Agricultural Research Institute in Nigeria. And he had just been appointed head of a new service called the International Service to National Agricultural Research, with headquarters in The Hague, Netherlands. Bill asked me to sit down with him on the steps of the going into the administration building at CIMMYT, and asked me whom he should look for as a head for his communication unit. I gave him several names, but about a day later, I wrote a letter that said, please put me on that list. Well, again, times and circumstances and places. He invited me to interview. This was along in October. We waited until November, the Thanksgiving holiday, when my wife Verna would be free of her work. She was still on the faculty at Iowa State. And we went over in November and interviewed for the job. Bill offered it. We took the train to Paris for about 3 days. And on the way back on Thanksgiving Day, we had agreed that we would take the job. And our Thanksgiving dinner that day was a large Hershey bar. I remember that. The train didn't have a dining car service on it. But anyway, that then I had from November to April to finish out my year's contract in Mexico. And I took about a month getting ready to go to Holland, and then had a little more than three years of some of the most enjoyable time I've spent in the field. To a large extent, because the staff came from all over the world. We were starting a new organization. This was exciting. And there was quite a bit of travel. I began to get to do things that I had not done before. Well, after 3 years there, and in the meantime, Verna had retired at Iowa State and was spending quite a bit of her time there in Holland, but she didn't enjoy being abroad as much as I did, and she had an aged mother who needed her care. Verna was the only child left in that family. So we retired again, not knowing just what was ahead, but that opened up a whole new world of consulting. So from 1984 until 2002, I was doing consulting on a short-term basis. I think the longest was probably a 10-week stint in Jordan with a team looking into the water resources of that country. The shortest was probably a week, perhaps here or there. But over the course of those years, I later counted up that I worked in 46 different countries. That is, I went through the entry, the immigration off line in 46 countries, some of them many times, like Egypt 6 times or 7, Jordan 5 or 6, Ukraine 3 times, and so forth. And the greatest fun of all was the South Pacific Islands. 15 different times I went into the Pacific Islands and got to feel sort of comfortable with understanding what was happening. The beauty of this kind of work was you would be back over a several year period and you could see what was happening and could see the effects of development on the countries. You would get acquainted with some local people, which is so different than going in with a tour. And in fact, I simply can't even tolerate the idea of a tour now. I always think of that book somebody wrote, "It's Tuesday, this must be Belgium," sort of thing. But just out of curiosity, one time I did some calculation and found that I had spent the equivalent of a full year of 8-hour days actually in the air, something more than a million miles of air travel. And in those days, most of it was business class, which was fairly comfortable. But that continued. Most of it, some of it was done through FAO, but most was done by consulting firms on contract with AID, USAID organization, and several in the South Pacific with the University of the South Pacific there. As the years went by, there were, of course, changes occurring in and outside and related to the work I was doing. One example that I would mention is the spread of instruction in agricultural communication or agricultural journalism. At the time I was interested in getting into the field, the programs that I knew about, where there were programs combining agriculture and journalism, were at Cornell University and Iowa State. These were the outstanding ones. And Wisconsin also had developed one starting back in the 19-teens. In fact, when I mentioned the change of bosses in Extension in Illinois, I first wrote to Cornell because as editor of the Illinois Agriculturist as a student, I had met Bill Ward, who was then head of that program, and I wrote to him about the possibility of an assistantship. And I gave the copy of my letter to the secretary and gave her the names of Dutch Elder at Iowa State and Bryant Curl at Wisconsin. And the first one she wrote was to Iowa State, and I think that letter went out on a Monday, and on Thursday I was called out of a meeting for a phone call, and it was Dutch Elder, and he said the new quarter was beginning in less than 10 days, and he was interested in me as taking the grant assistantship, which he had just established for his department. Well, Verna and I jumped in the car on Friday after work, drove up here, spent a couple of hours with Dutch, decided to take the job, went back to Decatur, and a week later moved here. And I got started into my graduate program in agricultural communication. Well, since that time, many programs have developed. Ohio State, Michigan State, Nebraska, you name it. It is pretty widely available now. I've felt some relationship to the program at the University of Illinois. There was not a specialized program there at the time, nor was there a way to join the two colleges of liberal arts and agriculture to get a degree. But Hadley Reed, whom I had mentioned, had graduated and taken a master's at Iowa State and had worked in the information office before he went to the job at Illinois. So he had background in the academic side. And as I was working in Decatur, I often was in touch with Hadley about things related to communication and journalism. And he decided at one point that there should be a program at Iowa State, or at Illinois, I should say. And one day he told me that he had started the ball rolling on my behalf, that my situation had just been on his mind, and he took a proposal to the dean, and a few years later got the program started. And one of the great things Hadley did was recruit young Jim Evans into that program, and as they say, the rest is history. And Illinois is, in my view, one of the premier programs in ag communication available at the land-grant colleges. But as this developed, it seemed to me that we began to get recruits into the land-grant programs who had journalism training. Earlier, it was often a person who had been hired as a reporter for a newspaper, who came from a farm and had an interest in agriculture. And so they developed the journalistic skills, in a sense, on the job. Now we were getting the opportunity to bring the two along together, journalistic skills and the basic scientific backgrounding in agriculture, which I still hold to the opinion that this is a necessary combination for, in general, for dealing with agriculture in the media. There are many examples, of course, of people with a journalism program who develop agricultural science skills. There are persons out of agricultural science who develop communication skills. I think it makes sense to bring the two together. And thus, I think it's valuable that this trend has broadened. Unfortunately, at the other side, there are programs such as at Iowa State where the agricultural journalism program was actually taken out of the journalism school and placed in agricultural education. This was not a move that I favored. There was a time when our State Board of Regents, headed by a businessman, were keen to root out any kinds of duplication. And he thought the journalism programs at both Iowa State and the State University were surely duplicative, and therefore he wanted to get rid of that department if he could. Well, the graduates of the journalism department really came in defense of the department, And there were some outstanding, well-known names of people bearing degrees from Iowa State. One of the leading ones was Hugh Seide with Time Magazine, and many others who were important in the field. So we managed to keep the department, but a few years later we lost the ag journalism part of it. But the degree program is still available. I've not really tried to figure out if it's as strong as it was once or not. I suspect the students come back to the journalism department for a number of their courses. But in that time also had developed much more an interest in applying the behavioral science background as part of the understanding of the agricultural journalist as he or she goes about their work. I felt myself as a sort of a pioneer in bringing these two fields together in my doctoral work at the University of Wisconsin. I had the good fortune there to have on my advisory committee Dr. Bryant Curl, who was one of the key influences of moving a research and interest into the concern and, well, the interests of the writers and editors in the offices. He was on the committee, and another was Dr. Bob Parks, who later spent 25 years as president at Iowa State. When I talked to them in terms of what courses I should take in my second semester, I had gone in with three lists of courses. Ones that I assumed I would need to take, courses that would probably be good for me, and courses that I wanted to take. They threw out the first two lists. So in my year there, I was able to get what I wanted, which was largely behavioral sciences, political science, social psychology, sociology, what I considered the background to understanding human behavior, since I regarded the role of the communicator being that of relating to behavior of his or her receivers. Thus, I sort of considered myself one of the early spin doctors in the business, because of the background with the strong behavioral side. I did my own research on an experiment related to the influences of symbols on the attitudes of the receivers. This was done, of course, with a college audience, since that's the only place that you could find a group to bring together to deal with in a research situation. While I didn't prove beyond up to the necessary statistical confidence what I thought was would take place, all the indications were I was thinking in the right direction, and perhaps if I had had 500 instead of 100, we might have proved that if one uses the symbols that are important to the reader or listener, they're more likely to accept the point of view being advocated, which gets pretty close to spin doctoring, I think. I didn't really make a lot of use of that. It was probably in the back of my mind as we had sessions about developing campaigns and this sort of thing. Probably had an influence on being more analytical about the audience. Among the great influences on my views was the man who for many years was the head of the program at Purdue, Ralph Reeder. And his mantra was, know your audience, know the audience. This, you would get this from Ralph on most any project you wanted to bring up. And he was one who did go out to try to know what his audience was thinking about. Sort of late in my career, and later still in his, we worked out an arrangement where Ralph and Clara came and lived in Ames for 3 years. He as a visiting professor to the Center for Agricultural and Economic Development, which had an interest in communication. And one of the main things he did here was set up little, I guess you could call them listening groups, where he listened to the group. This was before we had very good sophisticated recording equipment. And so he would set out 3 microphones plugged into a recorder and take a group to dinner and then just let them talk. If necessary, he would introduce the idea that he was interested in what they thought about their communities. But he got some marvelous understanding of what was important to people, what they were thinking about, as the basis for understanding his audience. I've mentioned Dutch Elder as a major influence and Hadley Reed, and another would be Bryant Curl at Wisconsin. He served on my graduate committee at the University of Wisconsin. While he did not have a journalism degree himself, and I don't know, he could write a marvelous speech. Now, how much he did as a sort of beat reporter, I don't know. But he inspired some outstanding people among his students, John Ross, Lloyd Bostian, and many others who are well known to many of the people, at least of my generation, in ACE. These were probably the ones that meant the most to me. Recently, I received from Bill Carnahan, who for a time was the ACE archivist, some material on the background of the Reuben Brigham Award in ACE. And in it was a picture of the start of that program. And what was fascinating to me was I suddenly realized that there are not many of us still around who had ties back to some of those early people. I never met Reuben Brigham. He had died before I entered the field. But in one of the pictures that included him were people like Lester Schlupe, who at one time was head of the information program in Federal Extension. Another fellow who had decided that I was one of the symbols of the next generation. And he often wrote letters to me and set up things like, I think twice I was invited in to give presentations to the Federal Extension Annual Conference. I never knew exactly why, but I always went, always enjoyed it. There were giants in the field in that time.